We're substantially reduced in number here. And for the last case of the day, Jackson versus Bank of America.
Andrew Thompson for the appellants, Philip and Deborah Jackson. May it please the court, counsel. I'd like to call the court's attention to the fact that we are here today on a resolution from the district court via a dismissal under Rule 12b-6, and therefore the standard of review, as the court well knows, is de novo for a review of the lower court's decision.
I thought you were going to say we're here on Valentine's Day.
And we're also here on Valentine's Day as well. We wish the court well on Valentine's Day. Before addressing the substantive issues under Indiana law pled under our amended complaint relating to the quiet title statute in Indiana and our claims of unconscionability in that complaint, I would like to direct the court's attention to the very important question that has been raised on the court's own action of the jurisdiction of this court, and to make it clear that it's our contention today, and we believe that the only our contention today, that this court does not have appropriate diversity jurisdiction in any way, and the only appropriate resolution of the matter would be via remand of the case back to the state court where it was originally filed by the plaintiffs. Under the court's decision in this circuit of Appert versus Morgan Stanley Dean Witter, the party invoking federal court jurisdiction has the burden to demonstrate that the court does indeed exercise such jurisdiction, and we believe it's clear here that the defendants have not met this burden. Where in fact, their contention, recalling back to an argument earlier in the day made by Peter King, the fact that the plaintiffs are in essence choosing the forum appropriately and selecting the court in which the case was filed by filing its complaint in Hamilton County, Indiana, under which clearly had jurisdiction both under of subject matter under Indiana law and of over all of the persons involved as parties to the case, that had minimum contacts based on the transaction, the mortgage transaction, which is the basis for this case, the case should have properly been heard in Hamilton County. I'd like to point the court's attention to a sister case that was filed in district court at approximately the same time, captioned briefly as David and Cheryl Hess versus Bank of America and a variety of other defendants. It was also removed to federal court under case number 1:12CV0088JMS-DML after having been filed and later remanded to the Brown County Circuit Court under cause number 07C01-1112PL000597. We believe that the court's disposition on both levels of that case is appropriate and therefore call this court's attention to that case. It was remanded both on an issue of a lack of subject matter jurisdiction and diversity jurisdiction. Here the case is assumed to have been removed on the basis of diversity jurisdiction, which plainly never existed in this case. We filed it in good on a good faith belief that the defendant that we acted and named in the complaint with appropriate claims, we would not be here today but for the actions of the Indiana defendant, Midwest Mortgage, who was the original mortgage broker and we believe was a resident of the state of Indiana, and that this type of transaction is a consistent thread in countrywide transactions where a local broker, a local appraiser is used, and that the plaintiffs, the eventual borrowers in the transaction rely upon locally based relationships and enter into a transaction, which in our case we allege was not only unconscionable, but is entitles them to file an action of quiet title in the state court. There is no diversity jurisdiction in this case, and the only proper resolution would be a remand back to the state court. If the court does reach the issues of substantive law, okay, I want to address the larger, broader quiet title issue before addressing the tort-related and contract-related claims of unconscionability and negligence. The reason for that is because I will confess that we believe we have to cut new turf in terms of case law on quiet title actions in Indiana in going forward with this case. That needs to be done not because of the uniqueness or the absence of the validity of the claim, but because the statute is so clear in allowing for the filing of this type of claim on behalf of the owner of the home. As our brief indicates, there are essentially two requirements. The interest of the plaintiff in the property at hand, and under the statute, the interest of the plaintiff in the property, and an adverse claim of the defendant. And the reason why it's so important for a quiet title, the equitable remedy of a quiet title, to exist under Indiana law is so that...
Did you say that there are presently cases in Indiana which permit quiet title for this sort of a thing?
Your Honor, we have not found any specific cases addressing the claims of quiet title in this type of...
My question was really couched in it. Is there how do you use quiet title to discuss a mortgage beef?
How do we utilize quiet title to discuss the mortgage beef? In essence, the way I explain it, Your Honor, is the quiet title action addresses what, and I would draw a parallel to claims of adverse possession, which deal with, in adverse possession, you're dealing with specific space and time issues.
Well, there's no dispute as to who owns the property, is there? I mean,
there is no dispute to who owns the property.
Isn't quiet title to determine who owns the property?
The quiet title is to determine the validity of the liens that are recorded against
it. The quiet title is to determine who owns the property. The validity of the lien will come into play only if there's a claim by the lien holder that he owns the property.
What's my understanding, Your Honor, under the quiet title statute in Indiana?
Maybe you're right.
Okay. That it enables the clearance.
I'm not familiar with the Indiana quiet title.
The statutory citation is IC 32-30-2-20.
Your position is that it clears up everything.
Our position is that it's there to clear up everything.
So
that it's make a final disposition.
Anytime the owner of the property was taken out of mortgage, gets in a fight with the mortgage, the one loaning the money, he can do it by quiet title.
That would be an appropriate action under the law. That is correct. Yes. Let's proceed. It's not there.
I admit that's novel, but go ahead. We're into your rebuttal time.
Okay. Very quickly, on the standards of unconscionability, with reference to the decision that was made in the Brown County case, even the district court references that we've properly pled the elements. What the defendants are claiming, in essence, is that something that can be resolved factually on summary judgment, a motion for more definite statement, or at trial. The defects are not in the pleadings with respect to the claims on unconscionability. And thank you. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Stephen Smith from Bryan Cave, representing Bank of America. May it please the court, counsel. I would like to address first the jurisdictional issue that was raised by this court, and what we have is a situation where Midwest Financial was apparently the broker that was involved in the origination of the loan, the plaintiffs named it as a defendant. They tried to serve Midwest Financial, but were not able to do so on the first try, and they never tried to serve them again. Part of the problem is that in the court below, the case proceeded without Midwest Financial appearing in the case. They were never served. They were never party to the case. Of course, the appellants want to get the case remanded to state court because they don't like the district court's ruling. They've been in the house for 3 years now without making a mortgage payment. And my view is maybe cynical, but I think this is just a delaying tactic. I think it's very important for the court to understand that there was fraudulent joinder here. The only reason they didn't bring up this issue about diversity in the lower court. They never challenged it in the lower court. They only got involved in discussing the issue when this court raised the issue. And what have they said about Midwest Financial? They say on information and belief that it is an Indiana corporation. They don't tell us what that's based on. They don't attach any documents.
The use of the quiet title to accomplish what they're trying to accomplish must be unique in this case.
Yes, Judge. He said it was novel turf, I think, or something like that. This would render, their argument would render any dispute between a lender and a borrower subject to a quiet title action. There's been no foreclosure action filed against the borrowers. There's nothing that jeopardizes their title in the property at this moment. And the district court correctly ruled that that claim was not ripe. Because they may have a dispute about liens, but under their theory, any time a lender and a borrower have a problem, the borrower could sue for quiet title, even before there's been a claim by the lender that, hey, we want to extinguish your lien. That hasn't happened here. And I think it's just a bogus argument, to be quite blunt. I also wanted to point out to the court that we, on the jurisdictional issue, we went and did some research. None of this is in the record below because they didn't bring it up. But we attached documents from both the Indiana Secretary of State and the Kentucky Secretary of State that both demonstrate that Midwest Financial was an Ohio corporation, I'm sorry, a Kentucky corporation with its principal place of business in Ohio. So there is diversity because the plaintiffs are from Indiana. So their good faith and belief, whatever that is based on, is just wrong, and they haven't done anything to make bald statement on information belief. In terms of unconscionability, the court below, I think, got it exactly correct. It said that the allegations that are in the complaint, and they're very sparse, are unbelievable. The allegations are that the borrowers didn't understand the loan terms. This is a conventional loan. It was not some kind of
I'm kind of a simple-minded guy. I believe a lot of things. What I want to know is the predicate for the suit at all in a quiet title setting.
Yes, Judge. There's no predicate, period. That's our position, and I think it's just a crazy argument.
And why wasn't your motion to dismiss on the grounds that they hadn't stated a cause of action?
I think we did move to dismiss the entire complaint, and the district court, including quiet title action, and the district court found that that claim was not yet right.
That's the predicate, not that it was not the appropriate method of resolving the issue.
Yeah, yes, Judge. I mean, I think the district court got it right. He just didn't see ripeness. And I think that was the end of his inquiry. He didn't go beyond that to get into some of the other issues.
Interesting.
How old is this statute, the quiet title statute?
You know, Judge, I don't know. I think it's been on the books for a long time. I imagine it's a standard, quiet title, statute that all states have.
Didn't come up as a result of the countrywide situation and all that.
No. And it was not directed at anything that Countrywide did. Countrywide got in trouble for adjustable rate mortgages, among other things, but this is not an adjustable rate mortgage. These folks paid their mortgage for 7 years and all of a sudden claimed that they couldn't, that there had been some fraudulent concealment. And they don't plead fraud with any particularity.
As I read it, essentially they said that they couldn't pay the mortgage, and the lenders knew at the time they made the mortgage they couldn't pay it.
Right.
And they lured them into the mortgage. I think
that's a fair summary.
Reasonably accurate.
Yeah, they say, the loan was taken in 2003. In 2010, they plead that in March of 2010, they somehow discovered some information.
Yeah, that they couldn't pay the mortgage.
That's what happened, Judge. They couldn't pay their mortgage. This lawsuit was filed to try to buy them more time.
And the bank knew it, and they lent them the money anyway.
Right, Judge. And they
knew they couldn't make the payments if they wanted to.
That's the kind of the weirdness of the argument, that we lent money to folks that we knew couldn't pay it back. Why would we do that? There's no rational basis
so
for us to do that.
You get the property and a down payment, and the payments they make in between. That's why you do it.
Right. But on the unconscionability...
Cost-benefit analysis is... easy one for this court to discuss.
Right, okay. Well, I'm happy to answer any other questions, but I'll rest on our briefs. I'll sit down then. Thank you.
How much time? You have 1 minute. We'll give you a couple minutes.
One of the questions I know is one raised by Judge Kenney. There's no new statute involving quiet title in Indiana.
The reality of the reason why we're cutting new turf is the existence
of... Oh, no. Listen to my first question. There's no new statute involving suits to quiet title that you know of.
There is no statute, to my knowledge, in any way that it came into play as a result of what has happened with Countrywide. On the other hand,
how old is the quiet title statute in Indiana?
I don't have the specific citation.
Well, can you give me a wild guess? Was it in effect when you were a boy practicing law?
No, it was not, Your Honor. I believe that it has been passed by the Indiana legislature in the last 15 years. Okay.
Nobody has ever used this to reach what you're trying to reach.
If they have, the resolution has been had at the trial level and has never reached the case.
Well, if it's that recent, I mean Indiana's had quiet title for, I assume, forever. But
it's an amendment to earlier statutes, is what the current version of the statute has been enacted in the last 15 to 20 years. Okay, my point, though, with respect to what has happened with Countrywide, gives rise to reason why quiet title actions are needed for this. Here, the problem is not with a question of who owns the property. If foreclosure takes place, the party that forecloses owns the property. But we run into real party and interest issues on these cases all the time because there's improper proof submitted of who the party is. And
bring this case after 7 years of paying the mortgage?
I'm sorry?
How can you bring this case after the mortgage is paid for 7 years?
Because the point about being unable to pay doesn't come about at the time it's underwritten. As the judge, I seem to note before, the fact that the parties that make the loans know that they can get paid by passing the loan on down to other parties, entering into collateral default swaps, securitizing the mortgages and so forth. They do get paid consideration for what they're doing.
But how could they know or suspect that this mortgage would not be paid if it's in fact wound up being paid for 7 years?
Your Honor, as our complaint alleges, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency has recognized the fact that these loans were in fact being made to parties that they knew couldn't repay.
No, in this particular case, how could they know?
In this particular case, The fact is that most of my clients that are in this type of situation have reached an age and a point in their life where their earnings capacity is severely diminished. And that's the sole reason why they're in this position. In no way is this case, I want to make it clear that in no way is this case filed for delay. If that was the case, they could go through the process of applying for repeated loan modifications and wait perhaps for 3 more years before a foreclosure action was filed. They want to know who they owe the note to properly and appropriately and file the quiet title action to clear up issues of who the proper parties are involved and who's actually owed what. And that's why we're here. As to Midwest Mortgage, if I may say quite briefly in closing, we did do the research with the Indiana Secretary of State. That's how we found the plaintiff and the address that we identified on Monument Circle in Indianapolis with the party that we had attempted to serve. But they're no longer
hiding, were they?
They weren't hiding. They weren't hiding, but they couldn't sustain their business, apparently, from what they had been doing. But thank you, Your Honors.
All right. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.